Hello and welcome to the IRPP's Interview with the Author series. My guest today is Daniel Hebert. He's a professor of geography at the University of British Columbia and co-director of Metropolis British Columbia. He's also the author of the IRPP study, The Economic Integration of Immigrants in Metropolitan Vancouver. Welcome, Professor Hebert.
Hello.
Immigration to Canada is primarily an urban phenomenon. More than 65% of newcomers settle in three cities, Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. What is unique about Vancouver's immigrant population?
Well, the first thing to say is you're quite right that immigrants generally go to the main cities of Canada. And the thing is that basically we see different international networks of immigration that focus on these three different major cities of Canada. If you want to think of it in the broadest terms, Montreal mainly receives immigrants who are francophone in language, and Montreal has a strong focus in Europe as well. Toronto is the global city, the city that receives immigrants from basically everywhere, and Vancouver is deeply connected to the Pacific Rim. What that means is the lion's share of immigrants coming to Vancouver are coming from Asian countries, especially East Asian countries and India in South Asia. And so there's a very strong ethnocultural focus to the immigration that is coming to Vancouver. The second side of this is that these international regions that are the sources of Canada's immigration are also connected to the different admission categories of immigration to Canada. For example, the largest number of business class immigrants that come to Canada are coming from Eastern Asia, and therefore Vancouver, being the sort of specialist in Eastern Asian migration, receives a really large share of business class immigrants. At the same time, India is a huge source of family class immigrants to Canada. So Vancouver, which receives a fair number of immigrants from India as well, gets a lot of its family class immigrants from that source. One other thing to say, to finish off this question, is that for complicated reasons, Vancouver does not receive very many refugees relative to the rest of the country. And this goes in two different ways. In the first instance, Vancouver is not receiving a very large number of what are called government-assisted refugees. Gets about 800-900 a year, something in that kind of general vicinity, which is only about 10 or 11% of the government-assisted refugees of Canada. And it also receives very few asylum seekers. Most of the asylum seekers who come to Canada gravitate toward Toronto or Montreal. Very small numbers are coming to Vancouver. So that also has a big impact in terms of the cultural composition of the immigration flows to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. How does Vancouver fare compared to both Toronto and Montreal in terms of the successful economic integration of immigrants?
Well, the first thing is the study is specifically on Vancouver, so I've got to be very careful with how much of a comparative focus I give on Toronto and Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just speak about it from a Vancouver point of view.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing in Vancouver is, again, we have to go through a little bit those categories of people who are arriving. So if we start with the economic set of categories, we're seeing, I would say, quite robust outcomes for those immigrants who come and are fully assessed under the point system. That means the principal applicants to the skilled worker program. What we see for those immigrants is quite strong economic outcomes provided they arrive in Vancouver with an official language. And, of course, for Vancouver, that would almost always be English. We are seeing much less favorable economic outcomes for those immigrants who are arriving under the business side of the economic system. For that particular group, we're seeing people who generally have a low level of education when they arrive and a low level of facility in an official language, and the economic outcomes for that group are not particularly good. Now, if we move from the economic class to the family class, there's a bit of a surprise here. In general, the family class individuals who are arriving do not have a particularly high level of education relative to immigrants as a whole, and also are not as versed in an official language as immigrants as a whole, and yet their economic outcomes are pretty good, generally speaking. So my interpretation of the cause for that is I believe the family immigrants are coming here to join family members already here. They probably, therefore, have a kind of a conduit into the labor force. They get help from people in the family, and they essentially rely on social capital as much or even perhaps more than their human capital. And finally, when you think of the category of refugees, there's, again, a bit of a surprise here. Refugees are doing a little bit better than I think people might expect. It's not to say that refugees are all getting jobs and are all earning great incomes, but when you think of the huge challenges for the refugee population and when you think of the amount of education and the language proficiency that they arrive with, their economic outcomes are actually pretty good.
Why? How do you explain the fact that refugees are doing better than expected and perhaps that the business class isn't?
Okay, just focusing on those two groups, I think I've already kind of explained the business class to a degree in the sense that we're seeing that group arriving with a relatively low level of university completion in terms of their educational capacity. And secondly, that's a group with really quite a low level of English or French proficiency when they come. I think that has a really big impact. Now, there's another layer that I think needs to be addressed and understood when looking at the business class system. The business class immigration system, especially for the categories of entrepreneur and self-employed immigrants, makes a big assumption. And that assumption is that if someone is successful in starting a business in another country and they move to Canada, they'll be successful in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It actually turns out that our business culture is very different, our systems of supply are different, our environmental codes are different, our labor codes are different, our taxation system is different, and above all, our consumers have a different culture. And when you add all that together, what you find is this is not a group that is as successful as might be assumed. So that would be another layer I'd want to add to the already stated explanation about the lack of language skills for the business class immigrants. Now, if we turn all this around to the refugees, I think the most logical explanation I could come up with is, again, a twofold explanation. One is a share of the refugees have come through the asylum claim system. They've been in Canada a long time by the time they officially land in Canada. They've already been, through that period, had a chance to develop language skills. So when they hit the immigration system and when they become a permanent resident of Canada, virtually all of them, it's well over 80%, if I'm remembering the data correctly, it's close to 90%, have already developed a facility in an official language. Well, that helps them a lot in the labor market. The second explanation for the situation with respect to refugees is the other side of refugees, those who are sponsored either by government or by private individuals, receive social assistance for 1 year. And that period of time enables them, I think, to develop the language skills that they need in order to get situated in the labor market. So I think that kind of, you could call it like a decompression period, perhaps you could say, or
mm-hmm.
a duration period, I think it's really helpful for government-assisted and privately sponsored refugees.
Are there different economic characteristics and economic outcomes among newcomers from different regions of origin?
Yes, there are. Some of them are kind of expected, and others are really quite unexpected. The expected one, we're finding that immigrants and refugees from the United States or Europe really are doing quite well when it comes to getting themselves sorted out in the labor market of Vancouver. This comes as no surprise. These are systems that are very much like Canada's in terms of their education, their labor market expectations, and so on. Let's be honest, they're also mainly white immigrants who probably face less discrimination than those who are coming from other regions. So that's a big kind of expected finding. Quite unexpected finding was that immigrants who come from Africa to Vancouver are, on average, doing quite well. I could perhaps get into that question a little bit more if you want to ask me a follow-up, but I'll just simply state that right now. What I'll then move on to, though, is the other surprise is the biggest group of all of immigrants to Vancouver are those who come from East Asia. It's something that I said earlier on, the strong Pacific Rim focus of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing with that group is really quite unexpectedly low economic outcomes, both in terms of labor market participation and in terms of employment earnings and in terms of total income for that particular group. And to some degree, that's no doubt connected to the fact that a very large proportion of that group are from the business class, and I've already talked about the problems that that group is experiencing. But the other side of it is the immigrants who are coming from East Asia have, generally speaking, a low level of proficiency in English and French. And I think this matters hugely in terms of getting themselves into the labor market and participating in the labor market at a level that they would feel matches their expectations.
Please do elaborate about the group of immigrants coming from Africa and their economic outcomes and economic characteristics.
Sure. First point is to acknowledge again that this is a relatively small group, so that's very important. No one should think that there's, you know, tens of thousands of Africans who are well off in Vancouver. The second thing is I don't have, within the data that I used, the ability to distinguish between immigrants who come from Africa, from different countries in Africa, nor do I have the ability to distinguish between whether they are white or black. However, the on-the-street kind of word in Vancouver is that we are receiving quite a large number of white South African immigrants to Vancouver who are often trained, for example, as medical doctors or other very high levels of training, engineers and so on. And my educated guess is that the data is being influenced by that particular group when it comes to Africa. I think they are doing relatively well in terms of their settlement and adjustment to Vancouver. I think the Africans who come from other parts of the continent, especially those who come in as refugees, and especially those who are black and face the issues of discrimination that might entail, my guess is, again, that they are not doing as well. But the data on average for Africans, I think, is quite unexpectedly good.
A generation ago, immigrants achieved income parity with Canadian-born individuals relatively quickly. Now the process is taking far longer and indeed may not happen at all for the majority of immigrants. Do you think that's true, and what has changed, if it is?
Well, what is true, no question, is that newcomers, that is immigrants who have arrived recently in Canada, have much poorer economic outcomes than was the case 20 or 30 years ago. That's just an undeniable fact. However, there's a couple of other things that we need to keep aware of. The first thing is that it turns out that those immigrants who do get into the labor market end up getting quite decent kinds of increases of income over time. As you said, that doesn't necessarily mean they will catch up to Canadian wage rates, especially very quickly, but nevertheless, there is a kind of an improvement, a significant improvement in immigrant earnings over time. So that's like a really important piece of the puzzle. To put it in more precise economic terms, you could say that experience and credentials that immigrants bring with them to Canada are heavily discounted in the Canadian labor market. And so when those immigrants look for a job, they're having problems. However, once they get a job, they demonstrate their proficiency, and things improve for them relatively well over time. Now, for skilled worker immigrants who come through the point system, they end up having really quite robust incomes within, let's say, about 10 years. Now, that's a long time, but nevertheless, there is a considerable improvement over time.
You write in your study that without an official language, immigrants with a university education or profession, I imagine, earn little more than those who've only attended high school.
Yeah, that's a real important finding, I think, and that is those immigrants who arrive in Canada at the point of landing with language proficiency have long-term benefits. Those immigrants, obviously, the opposite is also true. Those immigrants who arrive in Canada without official language proficiency face a long-term penalty. Now, it's important that anyone who listens to this podcast will know the data I looked at only cover the first 16 years after an immigrant comes to Canada. Now, that's not a whole lifetime, but it's quite a long time. And so what I'm saying is an immigrant who arrives in Canada without an official language has difficulty in the labor market all the way through that 16-year period. It takes a long, long time for someone to gain full proficiency in an official language if they don't already arrive with one.
Given your findings, the key one being, as you've just said, that language proficiency in English in Vancouver on arrival is key, what kinds of policy recommendations will you make?
Sure. Well, the first thing is to say that we've seen a massive increase in settlement funding in British Columbia over the last 3 years. And the data that I looked at are actually kind of before all this happened. So there's a hopeful sign here that there, you know, there may have been improvements since the study. You know, the study is looking at earnings in 2005, and that huge social investment started happening in 2007. So maybe to some degree, some of the problems that I've been identifying have already been, maybe resolved is too strong a word, but they've been tackled, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Settlement funding in British Columbia on a per capita basis trebled between 2005, let's say, and 2009. I think that's a really helpful sign. I also know that the government of British Columbia has put a lot of energy into steering that some of that money into enhanced language training, which I think is an excellent kind of thing to do. However, I would just simply say we probably need even more. So the language issue, I think, is absolutely critical, and the sort of first strongest policy recommendation I would give is we have to pay the utmost attention to that particular issue.
Beyond language training, do you go so far as to recommend changing in the selection policies?
Well, if I had a magic wand, I probably would put even more emphasis on language than is already in the point system. I think I would be reluctant to go all the way to say, you know, prohibit immigration to anyone who doesn't have the language. I think that's too strong a kind of a response. But I certainly would up the ante in terms of points for language competence. And I would be very, again, if I could wave a magic wand, I would be very careful to assess in an objective way that language competence rather than have it be self-stated or tested in a kind of a weak way.
Thank you very much for your time today.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much.
Daniel Hebert is a professor of geography at UBC. He is also the co-director of Metropolis British Columbia and the author of the IRPP study, The Economic Integration of Immigrants in Metropolitan Vancouver. It is available free of charge on our website, www.irpp.org.